So guys, there's going to be some rambling, a few different topics. We're going to be talking about Instagram bans. We're going to be talking about social media in general, influencers. We are going to get to some Q&A as well. So if you ask me in a DM, you might want to stick around. We have a couple of questions we'll be answering later. And we also dive into some discussion pull-ups as well. So stay tuned for that and we'll get into it. All right, everybody. So today we have back on the podcast, Abel Chabai. How are we doing, man?
Hello. Good. Actually, may I share some last time it was self-defense. May I share random goodie to people?
Sure.
So I don't know if I sent, maybe I sent it to you and Brian, but I don't think either of you clicked on it because then definitely would have reacted something. So there's a very, very funny video I'd like to recommend to the dear viewers. So unfortunately, I have to spoil it, otherwise I cannot tell you what to search for.
Okay.
But so basically the joke is that a girl thinks that the guy is about to propose. And I hope I can say things like this on this podcast. But basically, instead of proposing, the guy suggests that it's time for them to have anal sex for the first time.
Okay.
But like the reason it's so funny is because like I think it's Newcastle accent. I think that's what it is. So they have this really, I mean, for most years, kind of weird accent. So like the girl is like waiting for the proposal, and the guy says like, I wanna put it in your ass in this accent. And yeah, just watch it. So if you search for I wanna put it in your arse, you will find it. And I just imagine, so when I proposed to my wife, it was this very wholesome moment. So basically I proposed once we kind of agreed amongst ourselves, I basically asked her father if he would be willing to give his daughter's hand to me. So it was like this very wholesome moment, like the parents were all in tears. And I just imagined watching this video, like what would have happened if I made this suggestion to the father? I mean, it's obviously would never do that. Just knowing him, I kind of just imagine his reaction. It would make a good seen in any kind of comedy movie for sure.
I just saw somebody sent some reel or something, and it was the daughter introducing the new boyfriend to the dad, and it was just so fake. And it's like I can't even watch some of this stuff now. And somebody sends me the TikTok. Someone, I don't have a TikTok account, but you can still watch it if somebody sends it to you. And so much of it is so fake. I even just saw actually a funny clip with Neil deGrasse Tyson, who and I didn't really think about it. So I'm watching. I was like, oh, that's kind of funny. And it wasn't until I read the comics that people were saying, like, this is AI. This isn't even him. I'm just thinking, like, that is amazing. Because if once I heard that, I looked back and I was like, okay, yeah, like the way the mouth is moving isn't totally accurate. But I wouldn't have thought it. So if he had said something crazy or, whatever, racist or anything, I just would have been like, oh, wow, like this was said. And I am sure that that will be happening much more
Oh,
in the
yes.
future, right? I mean, it's
Yeah.
almost going to be to the point where you could have a video of somebody committing a crime and you could just be like,
Yes.
that's not me. Like, how do you know it wasn't me? It's just
That's
crazy.
exactly. Yeah, I was thinking about that. Like, it will probably change quite a bit, like how certain evidence is interpreted.
Yeah.
I mean, I know, as far as I know, video and photographic evidence was not like the end all be all in court or whatever. It was just like something they took into account, sort of. But like from now on, I mean, it will basically be worthless. Or I mean, it depends on how good this sort of technology becomes. But yeah, it's like, and even I mean, it's been so recent since this whole thing started with ChatGPT and whatever. But it's already getting to the point where people are so hypersensitive to it because initially, it seemed like a cool little hack that you can use to like create content and whatever. Like if you go on Quora, for example, and want to answer questions, like you just type in the question to ChatGPT, and I mean, I guess you could like just copy paste the whole thing, but it has a certain style in which it writes and whatever. So at this point, as soon as I see some like overly well-written text, like very formal and whatever, like all the details and everything, I immediately think like, okay, this was AI, whereas maybe it wasn't, but it's kind of like I'm curious how this will all pan out because at first I was almost concerned that okay, this is going to just make everything that we do obsolete, but now I almost value actual human input more.
Yeah.
So, anyways,
So,
yep.
getting into other topics. So this is a fun one that is not related to really to fitness, but just kind of the influencer world. And I guess I'll just name specific names just because it's relevant. But do you get this feeling? I'm sure somebody like Lyle McDonald would say this because he calls out the, as he calls it, the circle jerk of influencers in the natural community or the evidence-based community, right? So, but I see it on like a bigger scale too, where you see people who you know that they would disagree with people who they are friends with or sharing a platform with, and but they won't say it because it, I mean, and this is like a, you know, a tale as old as time, but they won't say it because of the connections that person gives them. And the biggest example of this would be many different people with Joe Rogan. Right. So like Lane Norton, and for the record, I like Joe Rogan in a lot of ways. I like his commentary on the UFC a lot, or just MMA in general. I do think he has some good podcasts. It's not like a personal thing, but there are many examples where he has said something on nutrition that's just really flawed. And you know that somebody like a Lane Norton would, and previously had called him out like crazy and like would say all these things about him. But he's got the biggest platform in the world. And so then once he was on Joe's podcast, well, then it was like, oh, well, Joe would say this, and like almost acting like they're friends, right? Same thing with probably Derek More Plays More Dates, definitely with Peter Attia. Like for sure, there are many things that Rogan has discussed where you know Attia would just absolutely think is wrong. But instead, it's just like, hey, well, here's this amazing platform for me. We saw even Attia went on like Peterson's podcast and, you know, like there's like the demeanor and everything differences. So, and I'm not even saying that this is wrong necessarily. It's more just, do you get the sense that as people's profiles expand and the platforms that they can go on expand, you almost get a less genuine version of them?
Oh, yes, for sure. And but and it's and I think those are all almost two separate topics. So I think there might be some people who will be willing to confront, and they are even doing it, but they are still a less genuine version of themselves. And I think that the not wanting to confront, I think that's more of honestly, I think that's more of a human flaw issue. Like, I think what you're doing, that you're willing to call out your guests quite a lot, and you're confronting a lot with your guests, I think that's quite rare. And like, I actually admire you greatly for doing it because it's not easy. Like, I have a very hard time with that. And like, for example, if I get someone on my podcast, it's like the person is probably gonna be a bigger name than I am in most cases. They will be busier than I am. They need me a lot less than I need them when I'm getting them on my podcast. So I'm thankful that they came on. I'm a little bit almost, almost shy about the whole thing. Like, wow, like Mike Israetel, like, why is he doing this? Like, he doesn't need to come on my podcast. He's so nice for doing it. So if I'm disagreeing with him on the whole volume escalation concept that he's doing, like, I have a very hard time calling him out. Like I have had a couple of episodes where I was sort of disagreeing quite openly with some guests that I got on. And afterwards, it's almost like I was just sitting there thinking about what I just did. And I was like moving around uncomfortably on my couch. 'Cause like, wow, like, do they think that I'm an asshole now? Even though I guess I did nothing wrong. I was just expressing an opinion. But anytime you're confronting with someone, like you're sort of, it's almost negative marketing for the person that you're disagreeing with. If you're, I mean, with your audience, right? Like that's typically the thing that you're giving in return for your guests, for them sacrificing their time, that like I'm giving you access to my audience and my audience to you, and it's a bit of a promotion work for you. So if you're disagreeing with them in a way, that's negative marketing for them, right? If they're actually losing the argument with you or whatever, but I mean, it's your audience, so they will be kind of biased or partial to you. And so, yeah, I think it's sort of like people know this subconsciously, even if they didn't think it through. So, like, they just have a hard time confronting. And I think what you're doing makes you actually a very unique sight in the in the podcasting world, not just in the fitness one, but in general. So, yeah, first of all, what do you think of this? Like, wouldn't you agree?
Well, I guess because to me, the point of the podcast, and this is something I realized kind of early on when I started this, I just enjoyed it and I enjoyed having good conversations with people and meeting new people. And after a while, I realized, okay, like some people are in it for this, but you realize, and I'm not saying this is a bad thing, you realize that some people like this is their job. And so it's like their career and they do this. They go on podcasts to promote what they do and they have a social media presence to promote what they do and all of that. And for me, I was like, I just really like talking about this stuff and like, expanding, my connections and there's certainly plenty of things I've learned myself from it. And so because of that, if I imagine having somebody on where I'm just like, oh yeah, okay, that's great. That's great. Okay. It does grow the channel. I mean, it grows like what I'm doing because it gets eyes on that person and therefore me. But it's like to what end? Like if you're like, hey, I just want to grow to, 100,000 subs or whatever it is, I can understand that. To me, it just sounds very boring. It sounds very boring to just have somebody on and have a thought come to my mind that I disagree with what they said, or I just want to press further to see what their thoughts are, and then to hold that back. Plus, I'm also
Yeah.
just naturally a pretty disagreeable person, which I don't know, that might surprise some people, but when I do like personality tests, I get somewhere between first and 10th percentile agreeableness. So, to me, it's just hard to not bring up if somebody has discordant points and whatnot.
Yeah. No, so just to be clear, I really hope that people who started listening to the combo didn't tune out yet, because it's a very important addendum that I think you're the one doing it right. And anytime I'm not disagreeing with someone where, like, in my thoughts, I'm actually disagreeing, I feel really bad afterwards. So I see this as just pure weakness. And I even have that in my personal life in a lot of different situations where, I guess I just am too afraid of that uncomfortable moment that might come if I'm expressing my disagreement. So it's just a weak thing that I think is quite characteristic of a lot of people. Like most people are just not very strong as like in their personalities in general. So I honestly think a big part of it just comes down to that. So like the explanation I gave was not like, this is why it's a good thing that people don't confront, and then this is what's justifying it. No, I think there's no justification. I think that's just the weakness explained. But yeah, like the not real self that people present, it's yeah, it's always a sad thing for me to watch. Like so many YouTube personalities that I almost like fell in love with over the years, and so many of them I had to ditch because I can almost recall the specific day where the just their tone of voice changed. So it was like, for example, with you, luckily I've never seen that, and maybe you even recall that one video that you sent me for a preview before you published it, like the one where you reviewed the Tom Grady book. I think it was that one. It
Oh
was a
yeah.
couple of years ago.
Yeah,
Yeah,
what about
and
it though?
I said like, yep. Yeah, so I think as far as the YouTube game is concerned, I think the video is great. That's what I said. And then you asked back, it's like, oh, and what about other aspects, or why did you phrase it like that? I was like, well, okay, if you're gonna ask me, like for me personally, like I like your kind of like lower key sort of vibe that you have.
Oh, I do remember this. Yes.
Yes. And it's like, it was more of a, like you talk more like a YouTuber, you know, like I'm presenting, which is great, but like it was not that typical Dave that I'm used to. And yeah, like with Jeffrey Verity Scofield also, like he still has that same vibe that I got in the beginning, but like he nobody, like I guess his style never spoke to me that much, but in the beginning he was just this, I had the vibe that this is an enthusiastic lifter, a bit narcissistic, but it's genuine. Like it's a narcissistic, enthusiastic lifter who likes getting really strong and likes getting really lean, and he's sharing his journey. And then one day there was this guys, like if you want to get in amazing shape, and it was like this Hollywood showmanship that I saw from him, and that's the moment he lost me.
I think a
So
lot of people would be surprised how, because, obviously I have varied guests on, but I think a lot of people would be surprised how some of these people are, behind the scenes, like just having like regular conversations with them, whether it's on the phone or whether it's a DM or even just after you've recorded and then you talk for a while. And not anybody specific, but just a lot of people. It's just there's just a different presence, First of all, like the difference between them in their YouTube channel and then them on the podcast is always usually a little bit different because it's not them trying to engage for 10 minutes. It's an hour long discussion. But then even from the podcast to just, okay, the recording's done and we're just kind of talking. Obviously there's substantial differences, but it's very interesting to see like the real people behind there. So
yeah, I mean, maybe we can put this out for like anybody watching this, make a guess, just drop it in the comments. We won't answer if you got it right or not. I'm just curious what they will say. So there's a person in the fitness industry, extremely savage when he or she, okay, he is by himself, but as soon as he goes on a podcast and actually talks to a person face to face, I've never ever seen him being a tenth or 100th as outspoken. He's actually very, very, very polite. And then he's on his own in like typing or just making a video. Ooh, like you would think that this person is gonna murder anybody who comes across him. Not quite the case. So
I know you're talking about. I'd be very curious to see how this person is in person too, because I feel like they'd be very benign in person.
yes.
But anyway, I'm like really not trying to even say it's like a negative thing. It was just something I've thought about because I would love to sit down for an hour and talk with Jordan Peterson, Peter Thiel, Joe Rogan, like, and genuinely not because like even if like if you told me that I could just get the bump in subscribers or whatever it would be, but not get to talk with those people. Or I could sit down for an hour privately and talk with those people. I would take the latter, genuinely, because I really would actually love to talk with them because there's a lot of topics I'd like to. And they seem like good people. So it's not that. It's just there are certain instances. And to be clear, I don't actually think Jordan Peterson does that. I mentioned him because of his podcast, but I don't think I've seen Jordan Peterson kind of, I don't know, change his tone when he's around people in that he's hiding something he would want to say. But I do see it with a lot of people with on Rogan's podcast in particular, people who are in the health and fitness world who I know would have strong disagreements with some of the stuff that's said on the Rogan podcast. When they're then on the podcast, they kind of keep it to themselves. And again, because it's like he's the biggest resource they could have, right, in terms of a platform. So I get it. It's just I definitely see it quite a bit.
And that's why, by the way, like the round tables and these organized debates or yeah, like debate sessions like the Mike Israetel versus Eric Helms and whatever, I think that's one reason why these are so good is because then they really have no excuse to be overly cordial and pretend like they agree more. I mean, I think that's not the only reason why it always turns out that, okay, like the disagreements they have are actually smaller than what they appear to be at first. But still, I think, like they always joke about it, like, oh, like they want to have this bloodbath, like Mike Israetel against Eric Helms. But no, they're actually extremely useful because, like, without you actually contrasting your opinions directly against each other, we won't actually see. Like, what are those loop? Like, what are the gaps? Like, seemingly you agree on so many things and you're both aware of the whole literature. Like, how come that you still disagree? And this is how we actually get to see it. But yeah, that's another reason that, like, if they are just talking without it being explicitly said that now you have to actually show where you disagree, they're just gonna be like super, super polite a lot of the times. So.
Sure. So this is just a question we'll do a little bit of like a informal Q&A here because I did have some questions. Let's see, was this, I guess it was last week somebody had asked me, actually it was on the new Instagram, so it must have been within the last few days. Somebody asked me when you gain weight, so I posted a before and after picture and there was about a 30-pound difference. And they were like, oh, well, now that you're 30 pounds lighter, are you doing 30 pounds more on pull-ups? Or is it not quite that much? And I said, honestly, it's almost not anymore. And I'm curious to hear your
Yeah.
experience with this, because the one argument would be, well, yes, you are adding weight. So, like, if you're bulking up, for example, you are going to be, like, let's say you over a long period of time, you add 30 pounds of body weight. But you're also getting stronger. And so, right, as you're gaining weight. And so therefore you could say, oh, like it cancels out. But I don't think that logic really holds up because, for example, like if I'm doing, let's say I'm lean and I'm doing, I don't know, like 45 pounds, let's just say for 10 reps or something. And then I were to gain weight, gain weight, gain weight, and I'm getting stronger a little bit. And now I can still at like, 30 pounds heavier, I can do 10 reps with 45 pounds still, right? If you were
Yeah.
following that initial logic, then that would mean that if all of a sudden, like you were had the same muscle mass and strength as your 30-pound lighter self, you could now do 75 pounds for 10 reps, right? And I just don't think that that much strength has actually been gained. Like I just because there's no other lift I'm doing where for the same 10 rep sets, I've added 30 pounds or whatever that percentage would be, especially at this point. Now, if you are an intermediate and you were 150 and you've gone up to 180, I do think you are probably putting on that level of strength. But I can tell you that on most of my lifts, when I'm 185 or I'm 215 or whatever, 180 and 210, there are definitely differences in my strength, but not, it's not like my squat, for example, would not be like 30 pounds lighter at 180 for a 10 rep max. It might be that I lost 10 pounds. The strength is actually pretty similar, which is why somebody like maybe Eric Helms, a lot of people these days would argue that you don't get a ton of benefit from bulking up that much. So that is to say that I feel like something else is going on because it's like in like logically, my body is 30 pounds heavier. I am still doing the same reps and the same weight, and yet I don't know. I don't think it's the same as if I had maxed out a pull down 200 pounds for 10 reps, and now I'm doing 230 for 10 reps. It just I because other lifts, even relative to my back, are not getting that much stronger. I mean, that's a pretty substantial difference on a pull-up that you and I have done for so many years. You're kind of more or less maxed out. I just feel like my pull-ups, they kind of just stay about the same. I would say I'm slightly stronger in terms of I can do slightly more weight attached to me when I'm lighter, but it's not a dramatic difference. I'd probably say my strongest pull-ups would be closer to like when I'm 185, but I mean we're talking like a couple reps maybe, not nothing huge.
So for you, so am I understanding well? You were coherent, but still, just to be sure. So am I understanding well that some lifts get a bigger boost and then some lifts like seemingly barely move?
Well, I guess I'm saying that if you were to look at the way like, oh, well, if your pull-ups are the same. Let's look backwards. If you are currently doing 45s for 10 while being 210 pounds, you would
Yeah.
think, okay, if I maintain that strength and I go to 180, then I'm going to be able to do 75 for 10, right? More or less.
So you're talking about like on the way down, other lifts don't see that big of a hit, but pull-ups do kind of go
Exactly.
down with it.
Right.
Yeah,
Because
yeah.
there's no way my rows or anything else are dropping
Sorry.
30 pounds, they're small amounts, but proportionally, it just seems like the pull-ups, and obviously you could say, well, it's not your whole body you're lifting up, but I mean, it is your whole body other than like, just the arms there, which is, not that much weight. So, and that's
Yeah.
more or less going to be the same throughout the time. So it's just interesting that that happens to me with pull-ups specifically, whereas if I were to cut down 30 pounds, I might lose a couple reps on a curl or a row. Whereas it's certainly not like I'm able to just add 30 pounds to the pull-ups. I hope that's making sense.
Yeah. Yeah, and it's also like I've never actually seen a very good explanation on why you, well, actually there was an article which sort of presented some interesting physics calculations as to why you get stronger as you go heavier. And I know it's not directly answering this question, but sort of just the whole concept of how your strength changes as you get heavier, even without you putting on a lot of muscle mass or losing muscle mass. 'Cause like, let's say even if you gain some muscle as you gain, I don't know, 10 pounds, 20 pounds, 5 to 10 kilos. Like it cannot happen as quickly as you gain strength sometimes. Is it the caloric surplus? But even so, I mean, I can just be at, like, I can just maintain my weight when I'm heavier, and some lifts will still be stronger. And it's definitely not the muscle mass at this point. Like, it's questionable if there is any. And even if I'm gaining some muscle, it's not that fast. So I don't know what it is. And there are some mysteries like this. It's not just the pull-up. Like, pressing strength seems to just notoriously go down more for people than some of the other types of lifts,
Yeah.
like upper body pressing. Is it like that for you as well?
For sure. Although what's interesting is that with, and I noticed this as I was gaining weight, my pull-ups, like I said, stayed the same strength or maybe slightly went down. And again, when I just want to be clear with people, I'm talking about the weight added. Obviously, if you were to factor in your body weight into like a total weight, then this is different. So I'm just talking about the weight added to the lift. If you're just looking at that, my pull-ups got slightly weaker as I gained weight. My weighted push-ups got stronger. And that's still a body weight movement. And I think the reason there is twofold. One, because there does seem to be a little bit more of a correlation with pressing and weight gain, number one. And then number two, because you are horizontal, just more, a bigger factor is coming from the actual weight added and not as much the body weight, right? Like the more.
Yeah.
So I think that that's the reason why the push-ups were actually able to add. But conversely, like if you were to do, God, I mean, this would be a pain in the ass, but if you were to do like a weighted vest, like upside down body weight, like shoulder press, right, like against a wall, I think that would be a little bit more of a similar issue compared to the pull-up, right? So either
Yeah.
way, it gets tough with the body weight exercises comparing it, but I do think if you look at the strongest people in pull-ups for weight, they're usually in the middle, right? Like you're not seeing really skinny guys who are doing really heavy weighted pull-ups. Now they might do really, like I would guess if you were to say like a pull-up competition of who can do the most body weight pull-ups, yes, that's going to be a relatively thin individual. And I think if you were just YouTube, you know, pull-up competitions and whatnot, they are generally thinner. Lean calisthenic bros. But if you're
Yeah.
talking like who can do the most impressive weighted pull-ups, they're not really skinny guys and they're not these like mass monsters. Like I doubt that I've worked out with Paul Canoe before when and he was smaller at the time, but still a big dude. Our pull-ups were about the same. Mine were probably a little stronger actually. Working out with Joey Zatmary, like 275-pound strongman, and I could do way more pull-ups with weight attached to me because he was already so heavy. Like these big guys aren't doing super heavy pull-ups. But I mean, I remember seeing this one muscular but not huge lean guy who did, I think, like 200 pounds for pull-ups. I mean, it was insane. So is that what you notice as well? Like guys who are
Yeah.
relatively muscular and
Yes.
lean?
Yeah. As you were saying this, I was just thinking back to when I made that video on strength standards and how strong people are at various levels of like muscular development. And then a lot of people were saying that I should have used body weight multipliers instead of absolute numbers. And honestly, so even then I made this argument, and now as you're talking, it's sort of just another, and then you think the same thing, that I don't see huge variance. Like it seems like once you get to a certain training advancement and you're well muscled and reasonably lean, so well muscled relative to your body structure, and you're reasonably lean, not shredded, but also so like, I don't know, something between, I don't know, like 12 and 20% body fat, so somewhere in that range. It kind of comes out to the same place for a lot of people. And if I think of chin up performance, whether someone was 5 foot 7 or 6 foot 4 and like 220 pounds or 170 pounds, like the actual added weight was relatively similar if, and the muscular development was also relatively
Yeah.
similar. So it's I don't know, like,
I do think the short limbs still help. Like if you look at Alex Leonidas, we were talking about one arm pull-ups, and I mean, if you just look at the range of motion that I would have to do relative to him, I mean, it's literally like twice the range of motion. And I don't see like super tall guys doing really great pull-ups, although I mean, there's not that many people who are like 6'5" plus anyway, but
Well, I know one, Thomas Campidell, for example. Like, so he is 6 foot 4, and just super long everything basically. And like we have a video, I have it on YouTube. It's when we were in Dust Gym Vienna. I mean, I'm 6 foot, like Jesus. Like he might be even taller. Like I look like a midget next to him. And I mean, his pull-ups might be his strongest
Really.
lift out of everything. Like he's
And actually,
very
my
strong.
friend John, now that I think about it, my friend John is 6'3", maybe even a little above that. And even within like 3 years of serious lifting, he was doing 100 pounds for two. So that's pretty strong for somebody who's only been lifting for 3 years and he's really tall. So yeah, I guess I would agree. Like the height, I still see shorter guys with like some very impressive ones, but overall, yeah, it's just interesting. It's like, because when you look at most other lifts, like bench really favors short arms, stocky builds, right? Deadlifts, longer arms, maybe a little bit lankier, whatnot. And even just the capability or the total strength capacity. I mean, I never got above, low 500s deadlift. So there are people who are literally twice as strong as me on that lift, right? And like, shoulder press. I mean, it took so much to get to a 225 shoulder press. I mean, there are some people who are literally doing double that. But for pull-ups, I mean, I guess it does exist. You just don't see it a lot. Like, you don't, I mean, my best pull-up was 100 for six. I guess there's probably a couple freaks out there who could do 200 for six, but I don't know. I mean, I could YouTube it after this and I'll find a bunch of examples, but it's not something you see much.
Martin Burkhan is, so he has a pretty similar build to you, so like 6 foot 1 and long limbs. And so I don't know how his chin up performance is, but I know that on seal row, he even broke a couple of world records. Like he's crazy, crazy strong.
Yeah, he is pretty much a freak. He
And
is
he
he in,
is
is he like openly enhanced now?
So I haven't followed him in a while. Like he kind of didn't he fall off the face of the earth a
Yeah,
while ago
I don't
again?
know what he does now.
But last time, so I don't know. As of like 2019, he was claiming natural, as far as I know. I mean, it was always like his story, like how much muscle he gained at one point. Like said that he dieted down to like 5% body fat, and then in 3 months he added 20 pounds to his frame, and most of that was muscle. So like that was a little bit sketchy, and then he always looked a li just a little bit too good to be true. But
I just
I
assumed
mean,
because
his
at one
stats
point,
could be.
because he was always so lean, and then one day I looked and he was like, he looked like who's the guy from Rocky III, the Russian dude?
Dolph
Yeah,
Lundgren.
Dolph Lundgren. I'm trying to think of what the actual, like in the movie, what his name was, but
Drago.
Drago, yeah. Ivan Drago. It's like he was all of a sudden like Martin Burkhan was like deadlifting over 700 pounds and just looked insane. So I just assumed that he had made the jump, but maybe he didn't.
Yeah. I mean, so like on some pictures he looks really freaky, but then on his Facebook I remember there like having been a couple of pictures where he's just like sitting around with some guys, and he actually like looks quite natty on those. And Børge Fagerli, like he met he they're kind of acquaintances, like both of them live in that Scandinavian area. And he said that yeah, like honestly in person he just looks like a tall thin dude. He
Really?
just gets crazy veiny because he's really lean, but he's not like he doesn't look
I think that's
improbable.
almost everybody, though. Honestly, there's so few people I've met in person where I was just like, holy crap, like they're just so impressive. Joey Zatmary was very big in person. But other than that, I just think it's hard to look that big. Like, I'm not even like, this isn't even like a Natty Cope, oh, like everybody looks small in person. And I'm just saying to look huge in normal people clothing, it takes actually being a high body weight. Like I know some people who like Kevin Heinous I've had on. I think he I know he's a natural pro, And I mean, super impressive physique. Like his Instagram pictures are crazy. And working out with him in person, he's really impressive. But it's not like, oh, holy crap, like I'm doing a double take if I walk past this guy in the grocery store. You know what I mean? Like I've only really ever had that experience with guys who were enhanced.
And so either being like actually big, so like I don't know, like something between 200 and 220 pounds, so 90 to 100 kilos lean, or maybe you have a standout muscle group. So like I did think Mario Tomic looked pretty impressive in clothes, but he has just kind of stand his arms are standing out. Menno, like you did kind of notice him in the crowd when I was at this conference, for example, but because he just has like super wide shoulders, but most of that is just bone structure. But like this guy that I can think of him from this gym that I was using, he's like 6'3" and like I don't know, 240 pounds. Like that's gonna be a big dude. But yeah, like even Mike Israetel, to be honest, like maybe now he's much bigger, but when I met him, he would have been like, 5'6½", something like that.
I thought he's five
And
five.
no, so he is 169 centimeters, so that's almost 5'7".
Oh.
And yeah, and like 230, like low teens or 10% body fat, something like that. And honestly, even he wasn't like that much. Like the only thing is like he was the only one who actually looked like he lifted like right away, where you could even see it from far away that like, okay, this guy is jacked, but even he wasn't like whoa, what is that? Like that's crazy. But it was like 5'6½" and 230, like that's insane, but still.
No, I had the same experience meeting Mike, but I met him in a gi, so it's hard to know, what he looked like in normal clothes. For people who don't know, like the gi, like the Brazilian jiu-jitsu outfit there. So yeah, I don't know. I'm interested. I've met Aaron Straker, and I'll be meeting Brian in 2 months,
I'll be
possibly.
very curious of what you will say about him.
Possibly Alberto Nunez. So I think Alberto is probably just going to look insane because he's so freaking lean. But
I would not be surprised if you said that he looked actually like, let's say, in a normal t-shirt, he kind of disappeared. I would not be surprised if you said that.
I would expect that though. Like I would expect that for almost anybody. Like again, if you just think about it, like anybody who is 5'10", like 165 pounds, like that's not a big human being, right? I mean, that's like a high school student, right? Now, obviously, there are big differences when like, clothes are off and your person's posing and there's a pump and all that stuff. And I'm definitely not taking away from any of these guys. Like all of these guys would trounce me on a stage for sure. Like very impressive naturals. I'm just saying, this is what I've brought up on the podcast many times before. People generally see size. And so, like, I've seen guys who were pretty fat be called jacked and impressive by girls who just don't know really anything. And there's like, oh, like, I mean, even for me, I mean, I've mentioned before, I'm the fattest I've been in a long time. And I've had numerous patients be like, oh, wow, you're really getting big. You're lifting a lot. It's like, well, I mean, I could have literally just gained pure fat. And it's like, it's just how people view it. So, and that's just how it always is. I mean, that's why I think a lot of naturals, in addition to it, just taking more discipline, don't necessarily want to be super lean because, like, I've talked recently and I will probably talk more about how I will probably be going into more of a health conscious, leaner phase. And for sure, I'm going to look less impressive in clothes like that. And that sucks, but I mean, it just is what it is. So me at 185 clearly doesn't look as impressive other than Instagram pictures compared to 205, for sure.
Yeah, definitely.
All right. So Walson asked, just listen to your podcast with Stu McGill and Jeff Verity. Thanks for being level-headed and informative. I am 55, type 2 diabetic, and doing the strongest 5x5 and doing intermittent fasting to try and keep my glucose under control. Working on being consistent going to the gym. Would appreciate it if you would review strength training as opposed to bodybuilding-focused training And what modality of training should I focus on as a 55-year-old strength, i.e. low rep, blah, 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 blah. Okay. So should I do a mix of all of it? And how should I go about it? So obviously that's like a pretty detailed and person-specific question, but I think we could just kind of give general guidelines. So if somebody is 50 plus and maybe they're concerned about their health, they are trying to get strong, they're doing some intermittent fasting, like general guidelines, obviously we can't be like super specific. But if you have a client who comes to you who's older, wants to get strong, health conscious, or how are you looking at that differently compared to somebody who is 25, I want to get as big as possible, et cetera?
Yeah, so just because from where I'm sitting here now, which probably is going to change when I actually get to be that age, but I view someone at 55 as someone who already needs to take a bit more caution when it comes to training and avoiding injuries and managing recovery. This might be completely bullshit. Actually, it's very randomly. I had a client call and so, okay, I'll admit I'm 30. I will be 32 relatively soon. I might look 42, but I'm 32. So I had a client call with this guy who is 24, I believe, and he asked me, so can I ask, like, at your age, like, do you have days when you just wake up and like you just don't have the energy to like kick ass and tackle the day and whatever? And I just told him, like, dude, like when you will be my age, like you will find it so hilarious that you asked me this question. Because the thing is, I know that at 24, I thought exactly the same way that, like, yeah, like with 32, I mean, you're basically one foot is in the grave already. So things will not be the same. But now being 32, things are exactly the same as when I was 24. So in that regard. So, and now I'm thinking that at 55, they won't be, but who knows? Maybe I'm wrong. According to research, actually, like 55 is not at that point yet. So like over 60 and like closer to 70, like they're definitely showing some differences. And I mean, I know plenty of people that are still lifting at in their 50s and things seem to be working great for them. But at the moment, I look at that as someone who needs to take a bit better care. And the main thing, if that's the case indeed, is that just make sure that you don't do anything that would then prevent you from doing it regularly. So, because exercise is really good, especially for someone who has type 2 diabetes, more muscle mass, like more disposal site for glucose and all of the insulin sensitivity is better. If you can just build muscle and be active physically, that's going to be so good that if you get injured, that could be one of the worst things that could happen to you. And strength training inherently involves heavier weights, lower training volumes, and neither of those things is a very good thing for all of this, which is what you would need as a diabetic. So I would guess that hypertrophy training would be better. And in a general sense, for preventing injuries and just making sure that you can stay in the game, it's actually pretty simple. Like lighter weights in general are better than heavier weights. So obviously you want to strengthen your tendons, and for that you need some loading. So you cannot be just in the 30 to 40 rep range all the time. But all else being equal, lighter weights are generally gonna be better for injury prevention. So and that just all screams hypertrophy focused training more so than strength focused training to me. Well, what do you think?
Yeah, so on the first comment, it is funny because when I was 20, and I remember this girl I knew had gone out with a 30-year-old, and at the time I was like, "You went out with a 30-year-old?" Like I just remember
I had some
thinking,
respect for you so far, but from now on.
right? And yeah, it's so funny because now, I mean, and part of it, I mean, I think with my profession, like I have patients who range from like children up to literally 100. And so, I still connect with people who are like in college and whatnot, plenty. And it is, I would say mentally, it's pretty much identical. Physically, I felt exactly the same until I was like probably 30 or so. And then Lately, probably more related to my career than anything. I feel like more like general aches and pains, and like there's certain things I try to modify with my lifts and whatnot, but not like substantially, you know. And again, I think that's probably more career specific, and like doing surgeries throughout the day that kind of affect it. But at 55, I do hear most people who are 40 plus and definitely 50 plus say that they do feel quite a bit different. And it also just seems to be when some more injuries happen. I really try to be cognizant of that because I've never had a bad injury from lifting. But certain times, like I was adding some forearm work just to see if that was going to do anything. And that's a little sneak peek into might be doing a little forearm specialization to see if there's anything. But I could just feel almost like a tendinopathy maybe beginning around like the left elbow. So just things that I kind of want to be aware of. But it's definitely not like all of a sudden there's this cliff. So, but for
Maybe
this.
that's my maybe that's that that's why I don't feel older, because I was always banged up all the time, even when I was like and was never, except for like one shoulder injury, it was never something that severely limited me for months or anything, but I was always prone to these little overuse injuries. So I would start out something with a bit too much volume, too much frequency. I mean, people can go back on my YouTube channel and can see videos from like 6, 7, 8 years ago where I was talking about these things. Yeah, like elbow is flaring up, tendonitis, yeah, forearm flaring up, wrist pain, whatever. Like I had so many of these
Interesting.
from, it was not different when I was 22 to 25, really. So
Yeah. Well, I will say that, yeah, I was banged up young too, because I was doing, you know, questionable form on my deadlifts and squats. I mean, I had way more issues as far as like kinking my lower back or something being thrown off when I was younger because of the how I was lifting. These now are more just like, again, I think more related to an overuse thing, like just a little sore. And again, it's hard to separate that out from, you know, like a lot of different confounding variables. So in this
yeah.
particular instance of this guy, I think you can still focus on strength training at 55 plus. I don't even think the reps inherently are a problem, although I would say you are generally going to be more prone to injury if you're going for 1 to 3 rep maxes, for example. But I think, I mean, if you look at Brian Borstein, he does primarily at his favorite rep range, I believe, is 6 to 8. It's just
Yeah.
controlled. So you could absolutely still do controlled lifting with, you know, 5 to 10 reps and just still focus on getting substantially stronger. I think the intermittent fasting is great for somebody who is trying to control, you know, your blood glucose and whatnot if you're diabetic. I don't know if he said he was type 1 or type 2. Let me see. Type 2. So I think it's fine. You know, for the most part, it's going to come down to calories and obviously carbohydrate control if you're actually diabetic. But I think intermittent fasting is a good way to do that. As long as I would just make sure you're not somebody who falls under the, you're not somebody who falls into the trap of basically barely eating all day, having a little bit of food, a little bit of food, and then you're having, you know, a 2000 calorie carb laden meal at the end of the day. Because I've done that a lot, and the Keto body does that. And like, I don't think it's inherently a problem, but if you are actually diabetic, it probably is a problem. So I'm just saying you don't want to use intermittent fasting to the basically then binge at the end of the day and then run into issues there.
Oh, yeah.
Other than that, I mean, I don't think it's going to be that much of a different program compared to somebody who's, let's say, 35. I think you have to be aware of your blood work. And I'm sure if you're type 2 diabetic, you're seeing a physician, you're getting blood work. So for that, I really wouldn't change too much.
And really just physically. Okay. If anybody's worried about this, like a 32, other than the fact that I can no longer get up from a chair without my cane, everything is the same. So, like, don't be. Just kidding. I realized like 5 minutes ago, fuck, I should have made this joke when I started talking about it, but I missed the window. So.
There you go. All right. So, hey, bro. I hope you're good. Just had a question. I'm currently training 4 days a week. Two of those days are on weekends. The other two are Tuesday and Wednesday. Due to life commitments on Tuesday and Wednesday, I have to get up early to train. So, I manage around 5 to 6 hours of sleep those 2 nights per week. Do you think this could reduce my gains, or could it work if I sleep 8 to 9 hours on the 5 days? I guess I can go first on this one. So, I would still say it's not ideal. If you said, hey, what is ideal? You'd get 8 to 9 hours of sleep every night, right? I mean, there is something to be said for a sleep debt that will carry over. But you know, without dragging out a very long answer as to why this might not be ideal. Do I think it's going to have a substantial impact on your long-term progress? I don't. I think the night after that, you can just sleep quite a bit more. Now, this is back to back Tuesday and Wednesday, which I think is probably less than ideal. If you're getting 2 nights of 5 hours of sleep in a row, that I think maybe could be leading to problems, not even so much of the recovery, but also in terms of just the workout performance. I think you're just going to be more fatigued. So if possible, I would say, could you do it Monday and Wednesday or Tuesday and Thursday, so that if you get one, because for me personally, I mean, I know you, Abel, and I've talked before about I almost try to beat the fatigue, meaning like if I get a crappy night of sleep, I might just get up at 4 a.m. or 5 a.m. And I just this last week, last Thursday, couldn't sleep, 4 a.m. I'm wide awake and I'm like, all right, but before I kind of almost feel how fatigued I am, I'm just going to go and train legs. And it was great. And then I got it out of the way. And then the next night, I really try to get more sleep. So I don't think one night of 5 to 6 hours is really going to be that problematic. But if you could, maybe space them out a little bit.
Yeah, and it's also so I think I don't have like maybe Greg Potter or some other sleep expert would debate me on this, but purely from my anecdotal experience, what tends to happen is even if I don't sleep significantly more after some rough days like this, the sleep that I'm getting, it's just noticeably so much deeper and more like quote unquote intense, or I don't know how to put it, but it's like basically just dreaming the whole way through, or not even necessarily dreaming, but you can just feel it, like right, like there's the type of sleep when you get up in the morning and you're like, whoa, like the world has just gone by for the last 8 hours and I have no idea what just happened. And there's the kind where like, yeah, like I was asleep, but if I was forced to, I guess I could like recall a couple of moments from during the night or whatever. Or even if not that, like it's just not, it's like it's a shallower sleep, I guess. So I guess your body has multiple ways of making up for some sleep that other than just more hours within some limits, of course. So, but yeah, it's, I guess if otherwise you're going to bed on time, which is something to prioritize, by the way. I also noticed that my body is just very annoying in that even if I have some sleep debt, and even if I pull like an all-nighter, like I sort of hit like a this critical like crash period during the day where I almost have to fight tooth and nail to just stay awake. And then, but then like very annoyingly, as my bedtime approaches, I just kind of wake up. Like, I don't know, like, I guess the body just accepts that, okay, I guess I'm just, this is one of those days. So, time to make you more alert. So, by the time my bedtime approaches, I once again have the same sort of temptation that I would have on any other day that, like, ah, I can stay awake a bit longer. Let's do some, I don't know, let's mess around on the computer more or something. But then once I just put myself down in my bed, I'm out within like, I don't know, 2 minutes. So yeah, just go to bed on time. And there's also, so if you have 2 nights of bad sleep or little sleep, like that's gonna reduce the average duration for the week by, I don't know, an hour or two or something like that. And there is such a thing as like a functional range, I guess, just like with body fat percentage, just like with calories and with so many other things. Like, yeah, the ideal would be something like 8 hours, which probably means that like seven, I guess, is still okay. Like you might be able to measure some decrements, but still, you will mostly be able to perform very close to your optimum, I guess. So it's not ideal, but on the end of the world.
The going to sleep on time thing is such a big thing because I work a lot and just generally I'm always getting stuff done, or at least I try to. And so sometimes I get to the end and I'm just like, dude, I just want to get in bed and just be on my phone and just chill, right? And when you do that, I can be awake for a while, especially if I don't even get in bed. Compared to if I get a book, I mean, I literally can't tell you how many times I have just had a book in my bed and I don't even get to reading it. I'm just like, I get ready, I just kind of get set. And I'm just so tired all of a sudden, I just crash.
Yeah.
It can take a long time for me if I'm not dedicated to actually reading something. I'm just kind of reading it for the enjoyment of it. To get through a book, it'd take me months because I'll just read like a page, versus if
Yeah.
I'm reading, like obviously Audible, I can get through very quickly. But even if I'm just reading during the day, it'll go fast. But at night, it's just completely different. So
Yeah.
that's a big thing. And then you were saying how the night after is very deep. And I was just thinking how like my best nights of sleep ever were probably back in college, where I disagree with doing this, but the coach I had at the time had me doing these big cheat days on Saturdays.
Oh,
And
yeah.
I would, so the night before, the sleep sucked because of the anticipation. Even if I wasn't that hungry, you just have this like hedonic anticipation. So I would wake up early. I could barely sleep. Sometimes it got to bed, I would allow myself to start the cheat day earlier just so I could get back to sleep. But I'd get up, let's say it was like 5 a.m. and I'm pretty tired, but I then eat. And these days, I mean, it was like 8 to 10,000 calories, right? So then I've had so many carbs and so much sodium throughout the day. So when I go to sleep, I'm full. I was fatigued from the day before. I have this huge carb coma, and I don't have to go to the bathroom because there's all this sodium and like carb intake. So I
Yeah.
just would have like a legit 8 hours plus through the night. And it was just so nice because that's pretty rare for me. I honestly, I feel like every time I go to sleep, it's just like, you know, you're going to get up once or twice. And I'm trying to listen to Audible so that I can not just be thinking the whole time. Like, I feel like I'm freaking going to battle at the time I'm trying to go to sleep. It's like this whole event. So if I could just like go to sleep, wake up, and it's just 8 hours later, that's very rare for me.
Yeah, it's yeah, the only exception to that. So I have the same experience, other than like if I have a lot of food, it's at some point it's also going to be more likely that I'm going to cause myself some kind of GI issue. But yeah, other than like usually I have actually the best sleep when it's very obvious for a while now that I'm super, super tired and I just cannot wait to get to a bed. Finally, like there was this I don't know if you had any kind of like survivor trip or something where like you had to pull an all-nighter and complete like this sort of a field. How do you call those things when you have to like climb over obstacles and find stuff in nature or in a forest or something? And like I remember like taking the bus and just like counting the seconds until I can finally get to my bed. And then like before that, a big meal, maybe a shower. And you know that feeling where you just get in bed and you just almost feel the bed just pulling you towards itself. It's such a nice feeling.
So cool, man. So that was all I had for Q&A. Today was kind of more of like a little bit of a ramble. Obviously, if you're watching this, you know where to find me, Brains Games Podcast. And again, if you want to follow the new Instagram, feel free to go over there. I'll have a link down below. And Abel, where can we find you, sir?
Yeah, you can find me at SSD Able on YouTube. So SSD Able is my username. And on Instagram, very odd to say that I have Instagram, and well, you have just a new one, is Able Fit Stuff. So yeah, that's my username. And that's it.
All right, thanks, man.